Hello, Soul Family, and welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. My name is Aishwarya. I am a mystic, healer, coach, and music artist. We are walking into a pivotal golden age on Earth, and it's time to cultivate the art and science of elevating your consciousness to extraordinary levels. Imagine having the most profound relationships, tapping into your divine guidance, embracing your true soul design, and unlocking supernatural abundance through your innate gifts. Those are the conversations we will be having twice a week, every Wednesday and Thursday, and we will have episodes that will nourish your spirit and expand your horizons. Don't forget to subscribe and become a part of our ever-growing soul family, and expect to meet incredible guests who will bring their unique wisdom and experiences to the table. And on other episodes, it will just be me and you. Remember, you're more than a listener to me. You are family. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. Today, I have such a special guest, Dr. Anne Brown, who is a PhD, RN, MS, formerly from Aspen, Colorado. In her private practice, she has served as the trusted advocate and advisor to influential corporate leaders, trial attorneys, athletes, leaders, and physicians. Also served their families, many of whose connection extend well beyond the town of Aspen. Before moving to Aspen, she worked as an alcohol clinical specialist in Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. She was the program director of the outpatient drug and alcohol program at Greater Cape and Human Services in Gloucester, Massachusetts. I never can say that. While living in Aspen, she developed a private practice. She provided therapy for families, individuals, and couples. Her practice was results-orientated, and with her therapeutic intervention, her clients developed the tools to become their own self-advocates. She served as a radio talk show host for KAJX on Aspen Public Radio. Anne Brown also interviewed people following their dreams. She is also a life and health expert in relationships. Anne Brown also reached a personal goal of obtaining her black belt in Subakdo, combined her own professional experience with that of her no-nonsense mentor, the former Chilean Minister of Finance, political prisoner of Pinochet, and corporate business consultant, Dr. Fernando Flores. Brown used a methodology that helped people reveal their blindness and learn to speak authentically, thereby decreasing their suffering and increasing their dignity and authenticity. She has been described by one client as having a very caring way of going for the jugular. Anne Brown is the author and narrator of the book Backbone Power, The Science of Saying No. Anne, welcome.
Thank you.
That was quite a bio because you've done so much.
Well, I forgot I'd done all that, so thank you for the reminder.
Of course. Today we are talking about dignity and your backbone, like, because you've written a book about backbone power, the science of saying no, and that's exactly what we're going to open the conversation with today. So what made you even get into this subject? Like, what did you see? Was it a personal experience, or did you see something in the world that inspired you to go in this direction of helping people develop their dignity and having a backbone?
When I was looking for a job in Boston, the job that I got was in the alcohol clinic. And in the world of addictions, substance abuse, unfortunately, people continue to use because nobody can speak up, because people enable them. And so you can't join everybody and not speaking about the elephant in the room. So I think that's where I developed an ability to call a spade and be the observer that these people couldn't be. Addiction, substance abuse, they're overwhelming for people, and we're not born with the tools to deal with them. So I think that's where I started to see that people were suffering because they couldn't speak up. Then it just branched into the world where, you know, if we're unfortunately raised as women, we're often raised to be little girls, which means don't rock the boat, don't have an opinion. If we're raised in families that have some dysfunction, the children have to become the adults and they have to learn how to speak not their truth, but speak what keeps the system quiet. And unfortunately, when that happens, they internalize all that and can get sick. Many societies don't encourage you speaking up. Religions, political beliefs, you really have to stand back and ask yourself, do I have the ability? And when you ask, what is the backbone? For me, it's three things. Do you have the ability to say no when you mean no? Do you have the ability to ask for what you need, which in some cultures is being selfish? For me, it's not. It's very similar to put your oxygen mask on first, because if you don't take care of yourself, nobody else is going to. And do you have the ability to speak authentically? And authentically doesn't mean I tell you everything I don't like about you. It means if there's something going on and you can't, I think one person said, if you sleep on it and you didn't sleep, then you probably need to bring it up. It's like, what conversations do you have to speak the truth in situations, to stand up for people? And that's what I mean by speaking authentically. And that's what most people in my world mean. They don't mean walking around, I don't like this about you, I don't like that about you. I remember when I first had a group and they were newly sober young adults. And they were going home for the holidays and they were like, oh, I'm going to tell everybody in my family there if they need to stop drinking. And I said, no, you're not. you're going to be very quiet and you're going to try and stay sober, period, end of conversation. And so developing a backbone requires timing, learning about timing, right conversations, right time, all of that. When we don't have that, we internalize and, you know, obviously we get sick and other things happen.
I mean, the majority of listeners on this podcast identify as being empaths, creatives, highly sensitive people. So I think this conversation is also really important, you know, for anyone that, I mean, I identify myself in that way as well. And it's definitely been a journey to get to the place where I'm at, where I can still be soft and, you know, still who I am, but there is, you know, I have a backbone now. I'm not saying I'm perfectly having a backbone. There's still things that challenge me and make me grow. But what in your opinion is that balance of still being yourself, still being open-hearted, you know, open to the world? You want to give love to everybody, like, because that's just who you are, but also maintaining your energy, maintaining your dignity, and having, in your words, a backbone.
There's several answers to that. One is, I can't remember the detective, but he was magical about kind of and you know what, I really think you killed your wife. He had a magical way about getting the truth out, and I don't think you have to be a sledgehammer. I think you can say things like, and I get asked all the time, how do I help my friend who's with a narcissist? I tried everything rational and it doesn't work. But if you say, wow, you know, that's not who I remember you to be. You used to like to be with people. Wow, that's interesting that you're not allowed to go out at all. Wow. You know, you there's a very quiet caring. Mm-hmm. I don't have any desire to be called nice, because mm-hmm. nice means I'm saying what I think you want to hear from me. Mm. I have a huge desire to be kind and effective and powerful. Mm. So if I say to you, remember when we used to and we had so much fun, and wow, that's not how I remember you, or I see it differently. There's ways that I can be empathic mm. and yet not let you drown. I have to reach out, because most people aren't. They don't know what to say. They would rather say nothing. I remember being interviewed about, what do you say to someone whose parent, spouse, child just died? Mm-hmm. And when I was interviewed, that was many years ago, and I said, you know, most people will go down, and people have told me that, people will go down a different aisle not to see you because they don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. Well, all you have to do is go up to the person, and even if you don't have the right words, you don't say, I know what you're going through, you just say, you know, I'm here. Mm-hmm. Whatever you need, I'm here. I can't mm-hmm. imagine. You can be direct, honest, firm, clear. Clarity is huge. Mm. And warm and mm-hmm. empathic. You don't have to get rid of those qualities. But I will also tell you this, in my working with people, mm. I would go 1 to 10, and I would say, here's a 10 on what you can say to your husband about how he does this, and here's a 1. Mm. You know, and some people couldn't do any more than a 1, which mm. is okay, because the next time you'll do a 2. So as you build up your backbone and it's clarity, it really is about clarity. My client who said she has a very nice way of going for the jugular, it's just because I say, well, if you come to me, I'm going to take a history. And if I hear cocaine in the history, I'm going to bring it up. Whereas mm. my clients would say, wow, every other therapist has taken 5 to 10 sessions to get to that. Mm. Well, am I a bad person because I get to it in 1? No, I'm just mm. an honest person who knows how to ask the right questions and yeah. knows what to do when she gets the answers. I had one client say to her mother, she's the one I'm going to go to if I ever decide to give up substances, because she's not going to let me get away with my lies. Mm. Is that a bad thing for someone to say about me? I don't think so. But did I hit her over the head in nastiness? No, I was just honest and caring. Mm. And those are far more important to me than the word nice.
I love that, because I'm very similar. I just want to go deep straight away, because that's just who yeah. I am. I want to know who you are. I want to know your story. You know, it's what I do, but I'm also like that in my personal life. And I know that's not for everybody, because people might want the lead up, you know, how are you? Yeah. How's your day? I'm just yeah, straight yeah. in there. You know, because it's depth, yeah. you know, I want depth. So I actually really love that you do that in your therapy work, because it really does save so much time as well. You know, like you said, what someone might take 10 therapy sessions to build up that rapport. Sometimes the rapport is just built by genuinely being like, right, you know, right. Just highlighting yeah. things or asking straight up. I think there's a real intimacy with that, but it's not for everybody, I do know.
No, and I remember somebody saying, I can't remember, it was some podcast I was on, it was a lot of people on it, and it was all people who'd been abused by narcissists, and one person said, you know, I want to take a few sessions to tell you all the bad things that have happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm not your therapist, because mm-hmm. That, and you know, there are people, Carolyn Mace, who says you should not allow your friends to talk about their divorce more than once because it wedges in your body. Now, that's extreme, but I probably err on the side of the more you tell that victim story, the more it gets in your body. And all of us who have helped people who have been abused by other people, we can write those stories. We know those stories. What we're more interested in is the damage it's done for you. And I don't get that from you going over and over. I have certain questions I can ask you, and I can tell right away, you know, that you're probably not able to say no. You probably have been never allowed to make a request, and an honest conversation. As one person who read my book said, I don't even know who I am. It's been so long. I don't even know if I ever was able to be honest. That's sad for me. That's really sad for me. But when you're raised in a culture or you're raised in a family where your authenticity is certainly not important because you have to manage all the dysfunction in the family, that's the type of thing that will happen.
And it's so, I mean, I just want to circle back to when you said that the more someone tells their story, you know, the more it gets wedged in your body, because that's so interesting, because so much therapy is based on reliving your story, right?
Right.
But it's, so, you're not like, but you don't do that.
I hope that you are loving this episode, and I wanted to just take a quick minute to give you something super exciting, a free ticket to the 25-day Finally Feel Free virtual retreat. This is not an ordinary event, it is a sacred global sanctuary designed to support, elevate, and celebrate your unique journey. Me and over 50 visionary speakers will be diving into the realms of quantum health and wellness, unlocking wealth through your natural gifts, exploring a new form of divine love, and elevating to higher states of consciousness to create and experience your soul destiny. Don't miss this beautiful opportunity. Sign up. The link is in the show notes below. And now back to our episode.
Well, I want to know your history, and I'm the first person to go over it. And then I'm really looking for the dysfunction, where they happened, what they did, how that paralyzed you. But for you to go over and over and over how much of a victim you are, it's a little bit like confession. It's a little bit like, okay, now what are you going to do about it? And if you're getting, there are cultures where the more abuse you put up, the more stature you have in the culture. I don't want to promote that. I want you to, and it's interesting because maybe the first one doesn't happen, maybe the second, but after you've stood up for yourself, what you thought might have been bitchy or self-centered or selfish or whatever will now start to feel powerful. And then you'll start to see where you can help others. But you can't, if you go over and over and over and over your story, that you're not going to go anywhere.
That's so important to know. That's really powerful. So what happens in a situation where, you know, you might have grown up in a family that you were never heard and what you wanted was never respected, and you've done that self-work, you know, you've built up those relationships outside of your family where you can be honest. But when it comes to family, especially in the holiday season, and you're back in that position and you've grown as a person, but you're still, you know, feeling unheard, or you're still taken back to your childhood dynamics. What do you do in a situation like that?
Limit it.
Okay.
You can't change the people who don't want to be changed. And We all have to set boundaries. And if you're the host, you can set more boundaries, like what conversations are allowed or not allowed. You can stay at hotels, not in the house. You can take your walks, bring your own food, or, you know, whatever you have to do to take care of yourself. And just not engage. And know, one of my supervisors, I'll never forget this, very brilliant psychiatrist, but when his father visited, he'd turn into this little, you know, he couldn't do anything right. He didn't know anything. And I said, boy, I think we can all relate to that. But I think you just have to, I mean, it's tougher if you live beside them and you see them all the time, but I think you have to treat family in the same way you treat toxic people. If they're toxic to you, you just have to limit your time, conversations you'll have, what they can have opinions about, or if they express their opinions without permission, then you say enough, no more. You have to take care of yourself. You're not going to fix them. And, you know, no system likes to see somebody get healthy, or let's say dysfunctional systems don't. So they're going to kind of grab you and try to pull you back in.
Yeah, that's so true. And how do we, like, just, you know, navigate that space? If you're becoming healthy and the rest of the dysfunction is still there, do you just, because I know, you know, guilt comes up when it's about family. It's like, oh, I need to be there for them. And then depending on what culture you grow up in, obviously I'm from an Indian culture where family is massive, you know, it's like a massive part of your just life and all of that. Although I've chosen a more balanced route, but what I'm saying is it just depends on your culture. And I know that guilt is a big thing when it comes to looking after yourself and setting boundaries and, you know, keeping that, maintaining your energy and looking after yourself. So what do you do with the guilt feeling?
So for me, guilt is a useless emotion. It's manufactured. It has no place, but it's promoted in cultures, certainly religions. And I'm much more interested in myself being accountable. And so I replace being, I've had people say to me, God, I work so hard to make you feel guilty, but it just doesn't work. Well, that's good.
I really love that. Yeah.
But I do take responsibility. I'm accountable. So I would probably say, given your culture, given the history, find yourself some role models who had to break through the culture's rules about how successful you can be and see how they've navigated it. You're probably taught you owe and you have to and all that kind of stuff, but I think you have to do enough so that you don't suffer. And what is that? And then you have to announce that to the family. And that happens, there's different discourses in America. I think in the South, it's very much kind of stay here, don't branch out, don't. I mean, it's different, but I have heard stories of, you know, why would I go to any college other than the college in my state? Because I don't want to know people except from people from my state. So depending upon what that, how strong that is, you have to set up, I can do this for you and I can't do that for you. And I know that you'll be able to figure that out. So optimistic and, you know, you can only feel guilty if you feel like there's some rule book out there that overrides common sense and self-care and stuff like that. And people talk like they have the rule book, but there really is, you know, other than be kind. And there's virtues that we all want to have, but then I think man himself makes up stuff that we have to be careful not to buy into. And the sooner you can get rid of guilt and replace it with being accountable, taking responsibility, what do I need to do in this situation? That'll be better for you.
Okay, so what is the example of somebody who has, you know, what are we all striving towards when it comes to this? What's a good example of someone who's developed a backbone but still authentic? Like, what, how do they show up in the world?
People want to be around them. Healthy people want to be around them. I when my friends ask me for an opinion, they want one. When I ask them for an opinion, I want one. I don't want them to tell me things that they think I want to hear. I think it's hard to find, because I think most women, because we are the gender that's hit the hardest in terms of don't be this way. So I think it's hard to find someone who has, can speak up, can speak their truth, can say no, can ask for help. But you just, you keep looking. And I think it's someone who can, again, is called kind and powerful and effective and can advocate for themselves, but can advocate for other people as well. Because in this day and age, there's a lot that's happening that we need to speak up about. And you know, if we stay numb and in denial, that doesn't help the world. So, and I don't see these people as, I think when women, particularly in America, I don't know other cultures, but I think when they first started to find their voice, they maybe were a little overreacting and loud and not went the other way. And I don't think you have to do that. I think you just have to say, you know what, it's wrong. What you're doing is wrong, and I'm not going to join you in it. You just have to say what's true for you. You have to say, thank you for asking. I can't do that. And then keep looking. Now, I don't know if this is true, but I think I can't remember. It was an actress that I would never have thought about this. I think it was somebody like Sophia Loren that we saw a little blurb on social media that somebody said, you know, I really like you except for this one thing. And she said, what's that? She said, you can't say no. You say yes to everybody. Now, I think more and more women are finding their voice and saying no. But if you look at all the sex abuse that women have been through, and men, and people did not speak up, but, you know, that's, we need to speak up. We need to do it for ourselves, and we need to do it for others. And you understand why you don't do it, because nobody's going to like you. Trust me. you don't get a million friends because you speak the truth. You get some really high quality ones, but you have to be prepared that when you start to be honest, you'll attract the people that want that and want that kind of help, and you'll feel healthy. You know, a lot of my book I've disguised, but a lot of it is about my journey. And trust me, there are days when I sit with myself and, is this a place where I need to speak up, or is this not my business? And you know, that's part of the journey, so you need to embrace all of that.
Yeah, that's really good to know. And it's so, it's also interesting, you know, because the first thing you when I said what is the example, you said people want to be around you. And actually, it's when people please too much, and people are like overly nice, and I'm saying that with my fingers and that kind of speech mark tone, it's actually people don't actually want to be around you. So it's kind of, you're doing, you're people pleasing and being nice, to have people want to be around you, but they're just probably thinking, what can I get out of this person? Or there's just no authentic connection there.
You ask any opportunist or taker, they know immediately who to ask to give them money, who to ask to run that event, who to ask. They know immediately who the people pleasers are. You don't want to be that person. You want to be the person, I like to say, I like people a little bit afraid of me.
Yeah, you kind of want to be like respected and kind. Yes. And just yes. You are who you are and your people are your people and nothing. And it's like a strong bond, whereas people pleasing is like you're on a rocky boat and everyone can just see. And this is triggering probably for people, but everybody can just see where they can, you know, predators of the world. Like they know, they just can, it's very obvious. And I think with people pleasing, there's an innate need to be loved, to be liked, to be needed, to be wanting to feel useful. And then it's just, it never works out because you just never get there. It's just this endless cycle. So this is, I think anyone identifying with the whole feeling of not being able to say no and wanting to be that good person, you know, if that ever exists, this conversation really is for you, because you have to develop the ability to be in touch with yourself and say yes to the things you actually feel resonates with you and then say no. So that's why I want to go on to that, because you have done a lot of work on the science of saying no. And yeah, I just want to go into, how do people transition to, because I know in my journey, I feel like I'm a flexible person, but I'm also really strong in what is a yes for me and what is a no for me. But sometimes what I get hit with is you need to be more flexible. You need to be more accommodating. In my heart, I'm like, so what's, I'm not sure. So what do you think? Like, where's that balance of, you know who you are. Like, you know what you want and what you don't want. But when it comes to flexibility, how flexible should you be?
Well, I think that depends on who's saying that. If it's your boss, all my stuff goes out the window. You have to, it's different. If it's all my teaching is equal. Mm. So if it's a romantic partner or a close friend, I would say, be more specific, please. Tell me more. If being more flexible means we do things your way, then that's probably not going to happen. If being more flexible means that I always want to do it my way, I can definitely look at that. I think it, you know, people have these phrases they throw out like, oh, I can never please you. Well, that means I'm not willing to take responsibility for my behavior, or you need to be more flexible. I listen to that with suspect, like, what is that?
Because it's normally the ones that, I mean, in my experience, the people that are my people and I have a natural affinity or natural compatibility with, they don't tend to say that because it just kind of works, and I respect their boundaries, they respect my boundaries, whatever. So that's people you kind of choose to have in your life. But then there's other people that you might just have to get along with, whether it be family or someone you work with or somebody that you didn't necessarily choose. So then that happens. It's like you want a good relationship with them. But then, there's that kind
of. Well, I mean, I think you could say things like, between you and me, I would say that the way of saying that is suspect. So my first thing would be, tell me more. Another thing I might say is, I will definitely think about that. And when I don't know the word I would use to say to someone, when I set my boundary or when I, you know, tell you what I can do, I will definitely take flexibility into it. But flexibility, I have to know what that means. And if it means we do it your way, then you're probably not going to like my answer. If the relationship is really important to me, mm-hmm. and I know it's going to be out of balance, then I'll decide that.
I think that's so interesting. I mean, my kind of philosophy on all this is obviously you need to be a full cup to be able to give anything. Like how you said, you need to put the oxygen mask on first. So I have to, make sure. I feel like that's my full-time job in a way. Like I have to make sure that I'm good from a place of not selfishness, but just for what I do in the world, for what my vision is, for what who I want to show up. I have to make sure that I am, you know, taking care of my energy. And it's a very subtle thing. Like I see it on an energetic level. That's how I identify when someone's like pulling up my energy or wanting me to be different so they get their needs met, or all of this kind of behavior. And then that to me is like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it shows up.
I think you also have to know who you are. I used to do courses with a Chilean man, and he would be energized by the room. I would be energized by, I mean, we used to say, I used to say, I don't like being in the room because I can't manage. I don't know how people are taking my information. I prefer a small office where I can manage everybody and I can see that person's getting upset with me. And he's like, oh, but I have such valuable information. I think it's lost on just a few people. I like the room. Well, that's fine. But he knows what he's like and I know what I'm like. I know that if I'm very social without my private time, I'm going to get off balance. Other people may get re-energized with being very social all the time. You just have to know who you are and then not let the person who's opposite you hijack your self-care. You have to take a stand for that.
Exactly. It's all about managing yourself. I think self-care is maybe got a different... so it's not just, you know, going to have a spa day or whatever. It's actually just managing your energy up as much as you can so you show up in a way which you're proud of, like you're proud to be this person that you so and that's so important as well for this audience who are, you know, highly sensitive empaths, because that is really important for you. Because if you're leaking out energy everywhere and because you're a sensitive person and you want to help it, like that's actually not the power of being an empath. It's actually to hold your own energy. So this is super important. So how do people start saying no then? I know there's like, I think I want to focus not necessarily on the language of it, but more about the internal thing that goes on. So first of all, who finds it hard to say no? Like, is it people who've never been able to say no? Is it people that deal with, you know, like guilt, shame, all these emotions? Like, in your experience, who finds it hard to say no?
People that would have been slapped or hit or shamed. I have a story in my book, just broke my heart, a woman who was divorced and brought her little girl, came in to me and asked how she could make the visits with her father better. And I said, well, can't she just make requests to go to the park, which is what she likes to do? And the woman said, if she made a request of her father, he would hit her. Okay, so do you think that woman is going to know how to say no or make a request? Of course not. So you have to overcome that. You can start with, and this is seems simple, but I remember I can't have ice because it'll trigger my asthma or whatever. So I always ask for my water without ice. But I remember somebody saying to me, why are you being so difficult? And I said, because I don't want to have asthma. if that's difficult for you, wait, because I can really show you difficult. But start in small places. Please don't give me ice. Please give me ice. Start in where it doesn't matter to you, because usually our triggers come from people close to us. Start out in the world. I remember I was talking to a taxi driver about my book and everything, and he said, "Oh, I just think I should say no 3 times a day. I say no once to my wife, once to my mistress." And I was like, okay, too much information.
Oh, well, you already went there then.
But he just thought that was a good exercise for him. So make up stuff, do it with your friends, practice. I used to do with some of my clients that were so codependent, I said, I'm going to ask you for a ride to the doctor, and I'm going to tell you I'm extremely sick, because obviously that's where we get triggered the most. I'm going to tell you how I can't get a ride, and you are going to tell me, no, you can't take me. Some of them could do it, some of them couldn't, but practice with your friends. Take non-heeded situations and then up the ante, because, you know, I'm not sure if anybody's done the studies, but if they did the studies, I can only imagine that illness can be tied to this, not being able to say no, because where does that go? You're angry. You wanted to say no. You're resentful. You just put it in your body. How good is that for you?
Yeah.
So start and take pride in being a little bitchy, excuse my friend, warrior-like. You know, be that woman. Oh, and you can always, I always taught, say thank you. Oh, thank you for asking. I can't do that. You know, just be nice about it, but just start today. Don't wait another minute. Start today if you can.
Yeah. And I've really met some powerful women and men who are very, like, you know, it might be the way they show up in the world is they can say no really easily, and they seem very warrior-like. But when they get into romantic relationship, and I've definitely been here as well in my life, where the minute I mean I've grown from it, but the minute you get into a relationship, it's like you're a different person. Then it was so hard to say no. And then I just didn't, I think it probably just reminded me, like, why do you think that is?
Because you go back, it's like I used to say when you ski the more difficult runs, I used to go back to old habits because you're a little bit afraid. Well, old habits of not being able to say no because maybe he won't like me or she won't like me. We want to weed that person out if we can't say no to them. So,
exactly.
And there's this big thing about be a fake person. That's why therapists like me have a 90-day rule. Nobody can be a fake person for more than 90 days. So you got to wait till the 90th till you see who they are after 90
days. Wow, I love that. So it's literally on the 90th day. But does that mean you spend every day with them?
No. Okay. I mean, we use that as a ballpark. I also think you just want to see how your potential partner can resolve conflict. And conflict only comes if you say who you truly are. And why not find that out right away? I'm not saying the first date, but I am saying if it's a big deal and you, politics right now in America, if you have, you know, if you're a blue voter or a red voter, you should probably get that cleared first aid, because that's not going to go well. And I just think it's more fun to be who you are than it is to be fake. And you do weed out people, but I think you're going to weed them out anyway, and you might as well weed them out before they hurt you.
Yeah, definitely. Or the first time they hurt you. that's just a no without anyone saying no. So, but in terms of, like, conflict, because obviously, you know, you could say no and then there's a tension, there's a conflict, there's that uncomfortable thing. You know, some people, dealing with conflict is personal to everybody. I'm an open book. What I used to do is the sign of conflict, I would just be out of there. I'd be like, okay, this person is not for me. It's like, I would say like a massive no, because I was so good at my yeses and nos that I wouldn't actually stay in during that tension and during that conflict to kind of create a resolve. Obviously, that is much better now, but I know some people could still be in that place where the tension and the conflict is just too much, and it's more of a overemphasis of saying no when you don't need to say no, in terms of like, this person is not for me, or this person shouldn't be in my life. So how do we, you know, sit with that tension and conflict and go towards resolving things when we say
I think you said it when you said, I think you said, I didn't enjoy. I think you need to learn to enjoy conflict and try it out with friends. But conflict, if conflict in your house meant you got a beating, then I understand. If it meant you were shamed, or, you know, it was horrible, I understand. It doesn't have to be that way. So the only way over that trigger is to create new memories. So hang in with conflict with friends and see how it can bring you to higher answers. There's a marital group therapist, and they can predict in America, and they can predict whose couple have the greatest opportunity to be successful by one thing only, and that is how they resolve conflict, and if they could learn to do it respectfully. You know, I understand that you see things that way, and I see things this way. So what are we going to do here? How about hang in for the conflict? It doesn't have to be fighting and shaming and abusing and all of the things that you used to. I have a 6-step conflict resolution, kind of how to do it, and you need permission and set the time. And it's usually better in conflict if you ask for what you want rather than go over and over and over how badly I did it. You know, if you just tell me what you'd like me to do differently, it usually goes better. But you have to make friends with conflict, because if you think in this day and age, any day and age, but particularly now, that you can avoid conflict, then you have a big fall coming.
Yeah, and that's exactly actually personally what I did to be okay with conflict. I just used my really stable relationships, like my really stable friendships, to just, like how you said as well, like saying the smaller things that would affect me. Yeah. And it was received in just such a great way. It was like, well, I'm really sorry I made you feel like that, and like creating, and it brought us closer. And then that was the blueprint for me to realize actually conflict is not a bad thing. It can be a good thing to have deeper intimacy and stuff. The next scenario that I wanted to ask you about was when someone shies away from conflict. So you are very, you know, you're fine to have a real conversation, to have deeper intimacy, and you're really comfortable with saying no, but the person you're dealing with is more of a nice, people pleasing, or maybe they are just an avoidant person, like they can't access what they feel about something, and it just, you've said something and it feels like it's got brushed under the carpet and everything's gone back to normal. What do you do in that scenario? Because it feels like your no is like, did you hear my no? Or
I'll tell you what somebody did with me, because I was raised to be a good compliant little girl, and so I remember a relationship, and I would just clam up because I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do with it. And fortunately, he just said, I'm sitting here. I'll get out the Hoover vacuum cleaner. But I'm not going anywhere until you figure out what you're going to say. Mm-hmm. And I understand when people say to me, I don't know what to say, because you don't know, because you haven't. But if you sit and you have a safe space, and you trust that you don't want to keep doing it the way you're doing, again, like you said, finding safe people to help you. Humor, I think, is really important. And that's what you can do for your friends. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, who would we ask if we didn't ask you? I know your silence, you're probably thinking of, however the help you can give them. We're going to sit here until you figure out something to say to me, because I think that silence means you want to say something, but you don't know. Whatever would help your friend, but just hang in there, because you've probably been there. I certainly have been there, and people have helped me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And even if you're not in the same space as that person, I guess you could just be like, reach out when you're ready. But also, I think there's also a limit with that. Like, if someone is genuinely just not communicating back, like, I think it's okay to say your piece and then be like, I'm done. Because,
Or, if you, I can't sit here anymore, but if you want and you have a request of me, if they're able to bring something to the table, great, I'll be there for you. I can't do any more right now, but you kind of want to pay forward I think, any help that other people have given you.
Yeah, that's a little bit of an enlightening. I think that's my next thing to work on because I'm so good at just being like, if you're, I'm here, but there's a limit. I think everybody's different. Everybody's different. But I think from this conversation, you really, the listeners, I urge you to just gauge where you're at. You know, if this was a spectrum of just like, how much are you honoring yourself, but how much are you also honoring the other as well? Because obviously relational like is also important. So
The thing I would say on that, and this is what Dr. Flores helped me so much with and helped all of us, is I teach people to, I don't want to be your therapist forever. I teach you to be the observer that I can be for you. I teach you to see what your blindnesses are, so that you don't know how to say no, that you don't know how to speak. And then it's up to you to keep going. So that's about all we can do for each other is to. It's like a coach. If you're playing tennis or whatever, you don't know that your forehand has to go that way or your grip has to go that way. It's the same thing in the emotional world. You don't know that you what you don't know until somebody helps you know it. And being an observer is a very, very powerful tool. And that's what I try to give people. I don't really care how you feel about things. I know that that's going to offend a lot of therapists, but what I care about is that you're more effective in your life. So, I don't feel like going to work every day, but my commitment is stronger than my feelings. So I want your commitment to being a better person to be stronger than one day, 2 days you feel like you don't want to be a better person. So that's a little different and a topic for another day, but it's a little different than what a lot of traditional therapy is about.
Yeah, definitely. And I did put that note in about sometimes it's good to just end the relationship rather than leaving it open, because I'm just speaking to the part of the audience that feels like it's their responsibility to kind of fix people or, you know, always be enabling somebody. So there's a line. There's a fine line. Like, I think you have to find your way with it because, yeah, you can, you know, be in conflict and leave it open and all of that kind of stuff. But there's also honoring yourself. And I believe just on a universal level, if something is for you, it will always come back to you. I don't know if that's true. Well, yeah, I'm glad you're agreeing. I don't know how true that is, but I believe that. So you can honor yourself, you can choose yourself as well and have faith that things will work out.
I agree.
Wow, this conversation was just so enlightening. Do you have, so what is, what can, how can people work with you? Or obviously we're going to put all your links down below, your website, your Facebook, your Twitter, your Instagram, but what are you up to right now in your journey?
I'm not taking new clients at this point, but I have a lot of information on my website. And there are other podcasts. I'm trying to get my information out through people like you and through my writing, et cetera. But that's primarily what I'm doing. I'm not sure what my next path is supposed to be, so I'm trying to keep that open. I know I can do this blindfolded because I spent so many years helping people in these situations. So I love the opportunity to get the word out.
Yeah. And that, yeah, and you definitely did. And, you know, also share this interview with anybody that you think might need to hear this. So, yeah, well, thank you so much, Anne, for this,
thank you.
Expertise.
And thank you for all the work you've done. And thank you for all the people that you're helping and for getting the word out. It's so important.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here with us. Your presence here is a gift. To ensure you're always in tune with our latest explorations, subscribe to the Soul Goddess podcast so you're always notified of a new episode. Before we part ways for now, an exciting reminder to claim your free gifts waiting for you in the show notes. These are available for a limited time and they're crafted with love and intention just for you. Be wild, be free, and forever remain true to your authentic soul self. Until we meet again, sending you so much love and light.